First question.
What challenges did you go through this week or today, just in general, mental?
Yeah, great question. So still the greatest challenge that I have is this idea of harmonizing my life. So I'm extremely active and I try to utilize time, understanding that every 24 hours is activity to me. So a lot of people don't think of sleep as an activity. I do. And I want to be intentional and definite with the purpose of my sleep. And so one of the biggest challenges I have is my son. My daughter's 26, 24, 21. I give them a minimum of 5 minutes a day, every day, 7 days a week. I make sure they know that I love them, I'm proud of them, and I have their back every single day. In our conversations every day, I ask, what are you doing? Did you do your best? What'd you learn? And did you have fun? But the greatest challenge I have is my son's turning 16 this week. And I'm looking, it's my youngest son.
Happy birthday.
So in the construct, I give him a minimum of 30 minutes a day. And now that he's almost 16, it's hard. He doesn't want a minimum of 30 minutes anymore. He wants what the girls have. And I'm not ready. I'm not ready to do that. So every time I'm traveling, and I try not to be that dad, you know, hey, do you want to, so like, I'm, for me, it's easy because he needs rides. So it's easy to get engaged. How are you doing? Get engaged because I'm like, hey, I'll drive you there. Because I know that's how I can get my time with him and be of value to him. But in about, you know, 5 days or so, he's going to drive himself. And my biggest challenge as I flew here was, you know, I want to spend more time with my son. Anybody ever hear the song Cats in the Cradle?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Man.
Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens. And I cry every time I hear it because of my dad. Now I heard it the other day and I was crying because I was the dad. And I could just see, because I went through with my daughters, but there's no kids left. There's always another kid to fall back on. So that's my biggest challenge. And I'm blessed to think that's my biggest challenge because my life, I get to do what I want, when I want, with who I want. And that is a challenge when you want to be with your son, but he doesn't want to be with you all day long and hang out. He's 16 or almost. Yeah, great question. Yeah.
I got the son on board to grab a box of books.
Okay, cool. I can handle it.
So,
and then behind you. Yep, good. Go ahead.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh.
I thought you were the best person to say, personally, well, in this world where you're in and how long you've been in it, what keeps you proud? Because you just come off like a genuine person, like when you're speaking with me, you're delivering the message.
Yeah. So I break it down to one, knowing my values comparatively to myself when I was lost. So I'm very firm on my values. So when I meet people, situations, events, I know that my values are gratitude in whatever event, situation, person. I have to know that I'm grateful in our differences. I think the biggest problem, especially in America, is that we've been fed an idea of equality. We're not equal. We're all different, right? We should have equal opportunity. That's what America was founded on. Equal opportunity. Every single person should have the exact same opportunity, but we're not equals. And so if we're teaching people that we should be equal instead of we should have equal opportunity, then we're losing the real appreciation of equality, which is we're different and we should appreciate our differences. I'm really more interested in our differences than what we're the same about. The same is boring to me. I want to know why you think differently than me. I want to know why you feel differently than me. I want to know what your values are. And so I stay grounded in gratitude, which is appreciation of everything. I spend a lot of time, if I'm not appreciating it, catching myself saying, be more interested than interesting. Appreciate this. Add value to it. Two, forgiveness is huge. More recent in my practice of being grounded, but I study forgiveness every day. The Course in Miracles is the text that I use. I've been studying for 10 years, but I didn't even realize how grounded forgiveness is, how much ease it brings to your life. And every text I read, forgiveness is so powerful. And then accountability has always been important to me. What am I learning from being responsible, attracting it and participating in the perception? And then finally, the idea of faith. I call it effective communication because it started as a value in business, but it led to spirituality and faith. right? I effectively communicate with God and allow God to come through me for the sake of others. And so I started when the world happened to me, I was being punished by God. Then I happened for me. Everything was transactional, quid pro quo, right? Everything, the more I give, the more I receive. God is for me. And now God is through me through effective communication. I'm just his hands, his feet, his eyes, and God comes through me for everyone. And that's, I think, what resonates frequency-wise of being grounded, being stern on your values. Yes, sir.
Question to you, yes. That is, I want to know, really, when you were really, really down, say you were broke.
Yeah, I was more than broke, yeah.
I'm interested in that. Where did you find the one little, whatever it's left, if there was anything left?
Yeah.
Because I believe that I've been there, and I'm still struggling with that. Where do you find that shit?
Yeah. So
that piece of trash.
There's a difference between motivation and inspiration. And so when you're down, when your basement has a basement, and everybody has a different basement or a basement of the basement. For me, it was significant because of the number of dollars that was, and most people are impressed by the fact that you lose that much money and make it back, but it actually makes things easier than you would think if you're humble. Because you know so much more about making money when you made that much money. You have different connections. I work with people that might lose $1 million and they're like, well, I didn't lose as much as you. I go, yeah, but your struggle is going to be more difficult. You don't know what I know. You don't know who I know in order to do that. So my understanding it happened the day I got depressed was Rocky. Like, I love Rocky movies. I've watched them all, even Creed movies. I'm just a big, huge Rocky fan. But I was lying there for the first time in my life, not wanting to get out of bed. It was the first time I was born with a happy gene, genetically, energetically happy, positive. They used to call my grandfather the toptimist because he was the top of all optimists. They could find, you know, unbelievable light in everything. And after I lost my mom's house, that next morning, I didn't want to get out of bed. And the first time. And so I turned on the TV and God gave me Rocky. And it literally was that scene at the very end where, you know, he's knocked down and he's trying to get up. And you can see him because everyone's like, stay down, Rock, right? Remember, if you've seen it. And I thought to myself, shit, if I can look up, I can get up. And I just started saying, motivation is getting up, getting back up, getting started and get back started. And until you get back up or get started or get back started, you're not going to get there. Inspiration doesn't matter, but motivation won't get you there either. You'll burn out. And so that was a big time for me. This is, by the way, Dr. Jason Pfeiffer. Asked him to join me on the Ask Me Anything because he has a different perspective than I do. So hopefully you may be able to share because as a surgeon, I'm sure you see a lot of patients that can't get up.
Yeah, no question.
And how do you motivate somebody else to get up when they're at rock bottom, maybe depressed or suicidal because of physical pain or injury?
And so, I mean, I think the enemy there is feeling alone, right? The enemy is feeling like you're on your own and like nobody's been through it. And then I think that, you know, actually, David, you taught me something amazing, which is ask for help, right? There are people out there who want to help you. There are people out there who want to step up and do things for you. And it's actually a gift, right? You've said it a million times. It's a gift for you to ask somebody to help you because then they get that opportunity. Sorry if I stole one of your
lines. That's good. No, you're not. That's my mission, man. I tell everybody, I'm here to empower 1,000 people. You can say exactly what I say. That works.
But I think in the moment, when you're down, when you're trying to recover from an injury, that being able to reach out for help, being able to believe in yourself, but also believe in the people around you, get a team who can help you. And that really will make a huge difference for you. And I think that that's the key. Feeling alone and being alone and burying your head in the sand, feeling like you can't do it is really, that's the recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Community is so important. You know, even I was studying the Blue Zones to make it. And it was interesting because originally with the Blue Zones, which are the areas where people live the longest and healthiest, And they thought it was the environment, the water, the food they ate, the diet. And there was no congruency from Long Beach, California to Italy. It was really weird. And they were trying to figure out, it was actually the common denominator, community. And I want to share one more story about more intimate community. My mom, when she got older, her children were very successful. And so we put her back into school. And she went to Columbia to get her PhD in education. She'd been a teacher for 40 years, an educator, but a student herself, loved. And it was like her dream to go to Columbia. She came home from school and I said, "Mom, what's your number one takeaway?" That's, you know, my favorite question. And she said, "It was the common denominator of all the kids that go to the Ivy Leagues." I said, "That's easy, money. Richer kids go to the Ivy Leagues." She said, "No." I said, "Then it was reading. The people who read more." "No." "Oh, then it was their math score. That must be it." "No." She said, "The number one common denominator of all the kids that went to the Ivy Leagues is they had dinner with their family." Which, once again, this idea of isolation, we have three different criteria of evaluating people in our lives. And I evaluate it by time. So the more important you are to me, the more visiting time I want to spend with you. That's my struggle with my son, right? I want to spend so much visiting. He doesn't want to visit with me. He wants to visit with 16-year-old girls. And I understand that. And I don't expect him to want to visit with me more. But I want to visit with him. So I'm very, very intentional about my visiting time by how relative you are to me, our association, and how much I feed off of you. And just because I used to say, you know, if it feeds you, feed it. If it bleeds you, fire it. But what I learned when my mom passed was that some of the most bleeding situations in our lives, like having three teenage daughters or a mom with dementia, can be the greatest feeding of your entire life. Yeah. And so I encourage everyone to analyze, who am I visiting with and how much time am I visiting, and what's my relativity to them, what's my association with them, and how much am I being fed from the relationship, and then prioritize those. I have a 5-20 rule. I give 5 minutes to anyone. In fact, I'll give you all my cell phone right now. And I promise you, anytime, and I'll do it right now if you want my cell phone. Anyone want my cell phone? It's write it down. I will give five, no problem. I'll give 5 minutes to anyone, but all my phone calls, I try to keep to 5 minutes with exceptions. And all my meetings and interviews, if you see me do how many interviews I do, it's because I give 20 minutes. But there's exceptions, obviously. And this is determined upon relativity, association, and feeding. But I can get to so many more people because I'm not visiting on those 5 minutes. So I do an average of 12 5-minute calls a day, 7 days a week. That may sound excessive, but it's not. It's 1 hour, where most people waste an hour on one person visiting that they don't know or barely know. Yeah, or doom scrolling. I'm very concise with my intentional time. So my cell phone, and please, you're welcome to text me, but I get a lot of texts. But if you really want me to get back to you and I don't answer, just leave a message. "Hey, this is Dr. Jason Pfeiffer. You met me at Aspire.
I've done it before.
Call me back and give me your phone number once again." I promise you, on my brand and on my word, I will call you back. I promise. It'll help. 858. So I also teach you a lesson about leaving messages. Most people don't leave messages correctly. Remember, if you can double the amount of people that call you back, you'll do twice as much business, but you also get better at doing business. So you'll do more than twice as much. I give a callback training, which changes people's entire business, because I teach people, how do I get people to call me back, DM me back, email me back? And so with phone numbers, here's the best way to leave your phone number. My area code is 858. The next three numbers are 688. The final four numbers are 3294. Think about how many times you left a message or you've gotten a message and you didn't know what it was. So then you repeat it again. My area code is 858. The next three numbers are 688. And the final four numbers are 3294. You will get so many more callbacks because people are lazy, apathetic, and they're like, "Oh, fuck it. I'm not calling that guy back." You know how many times I have to stop people in interviews because they're like, "Oh, you can reach me at Dr. Blah, 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 at so-and-so.com, 6584. And like a lot of people just let that shit slide. I don't. We're not that smart. So when you're leaving it, it's an area code 858, next three numbers 688, last four numbers 3294. You'll get so many more calls back that way. And I hope you call me back as well. Okay, cool. One more lesson as we go for everyone. We were talking on stage with all the doctors and the LinkedIn people. Everybody misses all these opportunities because they don't understand that the game of community today is capturing your essence. So I don't think it's a matter of courage to film yourself. I think it's more a matter of courage to post what's been edited. Why not just get in the habit of capturing shit, right? Going live. You know, like I do these meetups and we go live. So now, you know, thousands of people are going to listen to your questions, listen to my answers. Meanwhile, I'm creating content for Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, and capturing it for some sort of mishmash or editorial. Your job, if you want to help people, is to capture your essence. You can always find, especially with AI today, editing, posting, amplifying, and then it'll be a perpetual database that'll be utilized by AI, utilized by the future silo, the feeding, which will be regardless of the algorithm. See, every single platform works the same way. If they go and learn about you and they stay on you, the algorithm says, oh, they like you or hate you. Let's feed them more of what they like and hate for free. No ads. Right. So I want you to go down the David Meltzer rabbit hole. I want you to feed off of David Meltzer's idea. Stay there as long as you can, because once you do, you'll be walking on. Why is it so many people come up to me and they say two different things, completely different things? They'll either say, holy shit, man, you're everywhere. Have they not said it around you?
Mm-hmm.
They'll say, you're everywhere. Everywhere I go, I see David Meltzer. And then there's the bigger group of people is, hey, man, I'm really sorry. I didn't know who you were. How can I be everywhere and nobody know who I am? 7.5999 billion people don't know who I am. But yeah, sure. That's really cool. So my wife will like this. So I appreciate our differences. You got it. Who has the next question? All right. That does not amplify, just okay. Records.
Okay. How can I help you with your mission or anyone else that wants to help you? With your mission, can you restate your mission?
Yeah.
And how could we help you?
So my mission is to empower over a billion people to be happy. Notice I say over a billion people. Sometimes I'll interrupt people when they're like, Dave wants to empower a billion. No, over, never limit yourself. So over a billion people to be happy by teaching them to make a lot of money for the sake of helping others and having fun doing it. Enjoying the consistent, persistent pursuit of their own potential. So how do I need help? Share my content, do good deeds. Right? We were just talking about the algorithm, right? So be kind to your future self. Do good deeds. Share my content. If something resonates with you, which means I strongly agree with that or strongly disagree with that, right? Because that's why I'm wearing this hat, because I either strongly agree with it or I strongly disagree with it. Either way, there's a lesson to learn, because if I strongly agree with it, I want to know why. And if I strongly disagree with it, I want to know why. So I can learn more, because that's where the learning's done. That's what makes the most important growth, is when you learn something bugs the shit out of you and you go and you say, why is this bugging me? It's just someone's opinion, right? This is just a hat, right? People got so pissed off at me. I spoke at Mar-a-Lago and they got pissed off at me. I said, this is a location.
Yeah.
Like, you're mad at me. I'm paid to speak at a location. And if you think certain people are at this location you agree or disagree with, wouldn't you want someone that you agree with to speak to people that you disagree with?
Then there's a potential thing.
Right. Then there's a conversation. And either way, and I don't care what I believe because it's none of your business. And I don't care what you think because it's none of my business. But I want to know our differences. And then I can learn about why we think differently. And there's so many different subjects that people agree, but they don't realize it. And, you know, let's talk, for example, like religion kills me. Because the number one tenet of almost every religion is what? Thou shalt not murder. Right? That's the number one tenet. Guess what has caused more murders than anything else in the history of human nature? Religion. Need I say more? Right? Crazy. So share my content, do good deeds. We have a Monday group. Everybody can join. See Nick. We network. I answer questions. I make personal introductions every Monday. there is only a small fee because we don't want people that can't afford it to be there. And two, if people can't afford it but don't want to do it, because I guarantee it for any reason, you don't like the weather, get your money back. But we know you're engaged if you make the investment. So Mondays, Wednesdays, Napoleon Hill free training, Friday free trainings. Every day I go live and invite your friends, share my content. That really helps. All right, next question. Oh, go ahead.
Hey, Dave, I'm Andy Reese.
And, yes, you are.
Hey, it's like you have. I've worked with a lot of high performers and elite athletes. And how do you help entrepreneurs train their mind like their body of craft? And what are some of the biggest challenges entrepreneurs face when it comes to their mental game?
Yeah, I think everyone, whether it's mindset, heartset, or handset, it's about behaviors. So it's not because I don't like that. I just don't like what I had. So it's about behaviors. So the first thing I tell people to do is to create non-negotiable behaviors to hedge the uncertainty in the day. See, what causes the most interference is uncertainty, because human nature reacts to uncertainty with ego, and then we interfere with our success. And so what I do, and I teach high performers like Doc over here, is look, let's talk about what's most important, because if we dedicate half of our day, majority of it's sleep, by the way, 12 hours a day to where we think we want to be or better, 90% of the outcomes have already taken place. You won't have to worry about it. You'll be so successful. So what is it? Sleep. Minimum amount of time, no matter what, every day for sleep. If I miss, if I make an exception, I never stack two L's in a row. So I make it a double priority, double non-negotiable. So sleep's number one for me. So that's 7 or 8 hours for most people. Then comes health. Minimum of an hour a day, making sure my heart is healthy. So breathing, eating, drinking, movement, and sleep, right? Because if you don't do those five things, your heart will stop. So God already tells you what's important to health. Then comes family. Remember what I said on stage? So many people are disciplined working, they forget to make money. So many people are disciplined working, they forget to be healthy. So many people are disciplined working, they forget to spend time with their family. If you ask them why they're working, they'll tell you, because I want to make more money, help my family, and be healthier. Devotional people are non-negotiable in their health, their sleep, their family, then their finance, faith, then they study time for a minimum amount of time and study the relativity of that time. I talk about relativity a lot. It means meaning. Too many people don't give the meaning to what they see. They limit their self-image. You'll never overachieve your own self-image. So we take the bankruptcy that I have and I limit myself because of some historical relevance to that relativity, instead of saying, I have the wisdom now from losing everything and I have more faith that God's protecting me. I don't know how. That's not my job. My job is to have these behaviors and categorize them as either, is this behavior aligned with my divine direction, or is this behavior interfering with it? I do a quick analysis. Right? Smoking cigarettes. Is that in my divine direction? Drinking alcohol. Is that in my, well, it may be if it's a half a glass of wine, right? Just depends. So I'm constantly looking at my behaviors, including what I think, what I say, what I believe, and what I feel, not just what I do. So when you're very intentional as a high performer, but I'll tell you the easiest thing to do as a high performer is two things. One, sleep. And this is a secret sauce. You realize sleep allows you to recover and access information to elevate your awareness or frequency so that things are easy the next day. Well, if you're even 10% better than me, but I'm recovering 50% better than you, I'll kick your ass. Whatever it is, athletically, mentally, people forget about that. I'm an expert at recovery and access of information. So I kick a whole bunch of people's ass in all types of aspects of my life, not because I'm bigger, stronger, faster, smarter. I'm just better recovered and I have better information. So really good way. Anything to add?
So, yeah. So I work with elite level athletes all the time, right? And what I find is it's easy for elite level athletes to bury their heads, put their head down and work.
Right.
To just work. I'm going to just push. I'm going to swing the bat harder. I'm going to spike the ball harder. I'm going to run faster. I'm going to run harder. And what the easiest thing to neglect is, and this is coming from an orthopedic surgeon, but it's the mental side of it. It's sitting back, taking the moments to be with the people that are around you, to love the people who you're with, but also to start to understand where are my weaknesses, right? It's really easy for a triathlete who loves to run even harder. But if they hate swimming, right? If swimming is not their thing, they just get through it. Well, if they actually go work, if they work on their weakness, if they know that and they know their mental block there, then they'll actually become a much better athlete by finding that spot. And when people are recovering, recovery is what we do in orthopedics, right? We fix people, they recover. Their bodies are what heal things. That's really the key. They work their way through and working through recovery with rest, nutrition. I mean, we preach this all the time. Adequate rest, adequate nutrition. You've got to do low impact exercise and you've got to keep moving. But if you don't recover your brain, you're not ever going to get there.
I love that. And there's a relationship, not only with power and force, but there's a relationship with strength and weakness, right? We want to continue to strengthen our strengths, but we also want to strengthen our weakness. So understanding power versus force, every force has a counterforce, and understanding the relationship in your life in developing your strengths and your weaknesses and understanding other people's as well. Because one of the best things we can do, what, is to help somebody with their weakness.
Good.
So very interesting. Yes, sir.
Hey, my name is Torrance. Hi. I'm here specifically for this. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
I teach something to my community, basically like a fortune binder's mindset, where they to see the thing that you approach on the board and you'll find them.
Yeah.
How do people go from, for example, being an active, having like actively seeking gratitude versus having unwavering gratitude?
Yeah, so I think we all have unwavering gratitude. Some of us just spend more time interfering with it. And one of the things about gratitude, and I double down on the simple things in my life, because gratitude must be the simplest and most powerful thing in your life. I will promise you, if you say thank you at night before you go to bed and thank you when you wake up for 30 straight days, your life will change dramatically. And I know that sounds simple because it takes 0.1 seconds and it's free. Gratitude, 0.1 seconds free. Nobody's ever argued with me. They've all agreed with me. Oh, gratitude's amazing. Well, if it's so amazing, why is it by tonight, half of us won't say thank you? Even though what I said, everyone agrees with. And by tomorrow morning, half of us won't say thank you. And within 3 days, almost all of us will stop saying thank you. See, whether it's gratitude, forgiveness, accountability, whether it's infinite intelligence, intuition, inspiration, or energy. I love to say energy because I'm 58 years old. I travel 200 days a year. I have 4 kids. I have an amazing wife. I'm a very active person. And I still have professional athletes that shadow me. And by 4 p.m., they're sleeping in the back seat. And they're like, Mr. Meltzer, I know I'm younger than you. I know I'm stronger than you. I know I'm faster than you. How is it you're not exhausted? How do you have more energy than me? I said, I don't. In fact, if you stop interfering with the infinite amount of energy that we both have, you would have more energy because your body can handle more energy than mine because you're younger, faster, and stronger than I. But you spend all day arguing with your lawyer and your girlfriends and all this interference and need to be offended. And I heard it. Meanwhile, I'm living my life at ease, brother. I'm spending minutes and moments in dis-ease. And so although I'm older, slower, weaker, I got more, it appears, energy. I'm just not interfering with the infinite energy, intelligence, inspiration, intuition that we all have. So I'm keen. The biggest paradigm shift in my life is I am blank. I am happy, blank. I am healthy. I'm worthy. I'm wealthy. What am I doing to interfere with it and spend minutes and moments interfering with it? Anything to add medically or perspective-wise?
Sure. So for me, I'm in an operating room and every person in that OR, every single—
And he has a lot of energy.
—is not employed by me, right? So how do you motivate people? You've got to have a purpose, right? And you've got to have, when we talked about gratitude, you have to have sincerity in your gratitude, right? You can't walk through a day in the operating room, dog cuss every person in the room, tell them how worthless they are, and then at the end of the day, say thank you and leave, right? You've got to actually have some sincerity there and humility. Right? That humility to know that you didn't get here by yourself, right? There were 50 other people who had to have a touch to get you to where you are today, right? Whether it's your family, whether it's the people behind you, whether it's the OR team, whether it's the equipment reps, whoever it is for me, tell them thank you and be sincere about it, right? Gratitude without sincerity is really nothing. It's empty. But gratitude with sincerity will lift your entire team and it'll build everything for you, because then you'll have people who start to fight for you with purpose, even though they're not my employees, right? They work harder so we can move faster. We can do more cases. We can help more people because there's a purpose. But a lot of that comes from me appreciating what they do.
So good. Remember, people work for cultures, not for companies. Cultures are based off of values, what we discuss, daily practices that are instilled and developed, execution, clear execution, and then incentives. And one of those incentives is appreciation more than money. And so sincere acknowledgement of how much it means to you that someone has taken the time to be of assistance to you to help other people for the sake of whatever it is. These are ways that people want to work with you. They go the empty mile. One thing I learned in sports is there's a difference between people who go the extra mile and people that go the empty mile. See, what I learned about extra milers is people go the extra mile and they can only once in a while. And I love to use a Spanish kid. You have young kids, right? I've never met a kid who studied Spanish 15 minutes a day, 7 days a week that didn't get an A. 15 minutes a day, 7 days a week. Every single kid that does that in Spanish gets an A. But I know tons of kids, including me, that studied 15 hours before the test. I went the extra mile and I got a B. Why? That's what people do. They keep getting B's in life because they're lying to themselves, because they go the extra mile with their family, with their health, with their finance. They spend all weekend on something. But I promise you, 2 minutes a day, I'll remind you, 2 minutes a day is worth 2 hours on a Saturday. There's physics behind it, metaphysics and quantum physics behind it, in the theory that is like the compounding interest theory. Attention and intention is like interest. It compounds if it's daily. Attention plus intention equals what? The coincidences, the coinciding of the universe.
Right.
So what you pay attention to and give intention to. So don't just put up a vision board and say, I'm dreaming like John Astaroff, right? His Del Mar house. He didn't just put that up there. That guy every day, he did, said, thought, believe, and felt, I'm going to own that house or better someday. Yes, he paid attention to that house, but he gave it his intention, his definiteness of purpose. His purpose every day was greater than the pain, so that he had enough patience to allow the resolution of that pain to avail itself, to be a revelation in his life. And I see this all the time. I think it's the mathematical equation of luck. What I pay attention to plus what I give intention to equals the coincidences, the coinciding of my life. And people are like, shit, you're lucky, man. How do you keep getting everything that you desire? Well, because I do say, think, feel, and believe everything in alignment with what I desire and identify what I'm doing to interfere with it.
David, so as you were talking, before you started talking about luck, I was like, I got to tell him our quote. Anybody know the definition of luck? Luck, there is no such thing. Luck is when adequate preparation meets your opportunity, right? So you got to be prepared and meet the opportunity. And then people look at you and say, man, David sure is lucky.
Yeah. And to that other side, someone asked me backstage, I got one more thing I have to do on stage. And he said, how is it you don't get nervous? And I said, well, fear and excitement are the exact same frequency. There's only one thing that differentiates fear from excitement: preparation.
What kind of a
when I started speaking, I said to myself, I'm not stepping on the stage until I'm so comfortable and confident, the same as if I was clapping.
30 years ago,
I'm going to do the work so that when I step on stage, I can be grounded, I can be comfortable and confident so people can feel me. It's not what I say, it's how I say it, but it's what they feel that they remember. Because we are energetic beings. And if you feel strongly about something I say, you're going to remember it. And that doesn't mean agree with me. I just want you to feel strongly about something I say, and I want it to move you so that you can move yourself in the right divine direction. And it may be the opposite of one that I think is right for me, may not be right for you. Yeah.
What do you, speaking of relatives, what do you do, what is your approach with your kids? to show them to be grateful.
Yeah.
And to have
so
that attitude for the rest of their life, because we come from first generation, right? We do that.
Yeah.
But it's very difficult to explain to somebody that they look at your house, Papa, we live in a mansion.
Yeah.
We're rich.
Yeah.
So
good.
What is your approach?
Well, I actually believe that kids don't listen to you.
True.
I told my mom before she passed, I said, I just have to admit, Mom, I don't think I've ever listened to you, but I watched you for a whole life.
That's like, huge.
I don't give a shit if my kids listen to me, and they're all successful and they're happy because I ask them every day. I tell them, I love you, I'm proud of you, and I have your back. Every day. And I ask them, what are you doing today? What did you do your best? I don't care what you do. I don't care what sports you play. I don't care what subjects you like. I don't care what you do. I just need to know you're doing your best. I want to know what you learned and did you have fun? And I want to know that my kids are one of the hardest things that I have through the period of time was my oldest baby was just old enough to watch me be an idiot. Luckily, I was an idiot outside the house. But she's old enough to remember losing my big home in Rancho Santa Fe and the plane and the boat. She's old enough to remember because she was 8. The other one's not as much, but I know a difference in her energetically because unfortunately she watched what I watched in my dad, which is what I didn't want to be. But I got to watch my mom. Luckily, my oldest got to watch her mom. And for the last at least 18 to 19 years has watched me, and I'm proud of what she's seen. I tell my kids all the time, it's your choice. It's your life. It's your choice. My job is to teach you what I know about the choices that you make, and you decide if it's right for you or not. Right? I will tell you, I've never met anyone in my life who tried heroin and was okay. They either died or their entire life was fucked up. If you want to try heroin, that's what I know about heroin. It's your life. Not my job. I can't stop you either way. And it takes the pressure off of them. Right? Just takes the pressure. I don't care. It's your life. I love you. I want the best for you. All I can do is give you the information about what you're thinking about doing. You want to go to college? Here's what I know about college. I don't know if you want to do that or not. I'll support you.